Well, we're doing a seminar every day, 7 days a week, on Brihat Bhagavatamrita, which is very, very nice. And we're actually going to continue today. I'll be reading some verses from Brihat Bhagavatamrita and we'll say a few words. Yes. And as Vrajeshwari said, every weekend, Saturdays and Sundays, we'll do a program just like now. That's nice. That's really nice, because in Chaitanya Charitamrita, there's a whole chapter. It's, I think, the 8th chapter of the Madhya Lila, in which Lord Chaitanya is asking questions of Ramananda Roy. Ramananda Roy, very great devotee. They had just met for the first time. And, you know, normally you would expect that if you're with Lord Chaitanya, you would ask him the questions, because he's the greatest authority on everything. But in this case, by the Lord's very special arrangement, Lord Chaitanya was asking questions of Ramananda Roy. And there are two parts to it. In the second part, well, in the first part, Lord Chaitanya is asking about different levels of devotional service, gradually going higher and higher. But then, in the second part, Lord Chaitanya is asking questions just about different specific aspects of Krishna consciousness, like, what is the best knowledge? What is the best mantra? These types of questions. And he asks, Lord Chaitanya asked Ramananda Roy, what is the greatest suffering? And Ramananda Roy replies that, except for separation from the devotees, I don't know of any suffering. I don't know of any suffering except for separation from the devotees. And, you know, I think a lot of us, and I can speak for myself, have been experiencing that. And it's very profound experience, but it's also, it gives realization that how true are these literatures. Sometimes there are statements and they may be a little difficult for us to relate to, but, and even that one, you know, I've read it many, many times, but just more recently, going through this whole COVID experience, this particular point became very clear, very apparent, how empty life is without the association of devotees. And digital versions, virtual versions, you know, they help a lot. They're nice. They're really a lot better than nothing. But still they're not the same. They're just not the same. Anyway, so today, well, first of all, thank you so much for coming. I really appreciate it tremendously. And I hope that, you know, at least if the weather's nice, then I hope that you'll come on Saturdays and Sundays. You know, there's so much propaganda against vaccination, but don't tell anyone, okay? If someone offers me a vaccination, I'll accept it. I really will. And then we can have you know, get a little more involved. But at least for those of you who'd like, and for those of you who are able, Saturdays and Sundays, 3 o'clock, well, we'll start at 2:30, 2:45 with some kirtan as we did, and then 3 o'clock till 4 or thereabouts, we'll have a class on Brihad Bhagavatamrita, and I think this will be nice. It'll be very nice for me, that's for sure. So, devotees, into Brihad Bhagavatamrita. I don't know how many of you are following the seminar we're doing online at the moment. Today is the 13th day. And every evening from 6 to 7, we've been doing it the last 12 days. If you're not aware, now you're aware. You can always join us, why not? 6 o'clock, Monday to Friday. And step by step, we're going to go through the entire Brihad Bhagavatamrita, which is a truly amazing literature. So now we're in chapter 3. There are 14 chapters in the whole book. We've already covered 2. And now we're in the third. As we go on further, the chapters do get longer, actually, but I predict that in the next few months, I wouldn't think more than 6, we'll actually complete the entire Brihad Bhagavatamrita. And it's so nice. So please come, take part virtually, and Saturdays and Sundays, please come live. And we'll continue. So let us begin. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
It's all working, is it? Yeah? Okay. Right, yeah, we've got our little transmission set up here. All right, so devotees, we are going to read now. We are reading from Brihad Bhagavatamrita, which is written by Srila Sanatan Goswami. And the translation and commentary here are done by our BBT devotees, not actually Srila Prabhupada, of course, because it was all recently, fairly recently done. But it's so nicely done, it's incredible. And we're in the third chapter of the first part. And we are, let's see, we are going to begin with verse 9. Let me just give you a little background to Brihad Bhagavatamrita. Well, as a matter of interest, how many of you have read all or some of Brihad Bhagavatamrita? A few of you, not many. Okay. So here we are in the first part. There are 2 parts of 7 chapters each. And the first part is Narada Muni traveling around the universe trying to find who is the person who has received the most mercy from the Lord. Then the second part, you know, we'll get there after a while. Second part is the story of Gopakumar. And Gopakumar, in 7 chapters again, is going to try to find the best place and the best devotees. So, you know, they're quite closely related, but they're also somewhat different from each other. So here we are, though, in the first part, Narada Muni traveling around, trying to find who has received the most mercy from the Lord. And he's already, he began his quest in the first chapter in Prayag, meeting one Brahmin Vaishnav with his entourage, a very affluent but very advanced devotee of the Lord. And Narada Muni, he was watching this Brahmin Vaishnav and seeing what a nice devotee he was and how he was doing so many wonderful devotee activities. And then Narada Muni came rushing up to him and said, "You are the one who has received the most mercy." And then that devotee said, "No, no, no, no." And said, and that's a bit of a long story, but said, "There's actually a king in South India. He has received more mercy than me." And he gives different reasons why he feels like that. So Narada really goes to South India and meets that king and tells him, "You have received the most mercy." And the king says, "No, I haven't," and gives different reasons why he feels he hasn't. And then says, "If you want to know who's received the most mercy, it is the demigods, and particularly Lord Indra. You've got to go and meet Lord Indra if you want to meet someone who's received mercy." So Narada Muni went to Indraloka and declared to Lord Indra, "You have received the most mercy." And Lord Indra said, "No, no, no," and gave different reasons. And said, "Lord Brahma, it's Lord Brahma." And explained why he felt like that. And Narada Muni went to Lord Brahma and said, "You have received the most mercy." And Lord Brahma said, "No, no, no." There's a sort of sequence there in principle, as you probably gathered it. And Lord Brahma said, "It's Lord Shiva. He has received the most mercy." But, so you go and visit him, but don't go to the Lord Shiva who's living on Kailash within this universe, because he's just, you know, sort of like a regular demigod or something like that. You have to go and see Lord Shiva in Shiva Loka, which is kind of on the edge of the spiritual world. It's not within one of the universes. It's not within the material realm. So that's where Narada Muni is right now. And he has glorified Lord Shiva. "You have received the most mercy." So I'm going to read a few verses as they have their exchange, Narada Muni and Lord Shiva. And then you know what I'm going to do? I am going to, I think, my intention is then to say a few things about Lord Shiva and who he is and what he is and what his position is and some pastimes between him and Krishna, because there's some pretty wonderful pastimes. But let's begin with Narada and Lord Shiva on Shiva Loka. This is part one, Chapter 3, and we're going to begin with verse 9. Jagad Ishatva Mahatmya Prakashana Parai Stavai Astod Vivritya Tasmanischa Jago Krishna Kripa Param. Narada then recited prayers, glorifying Lord Shiva as the supreme controller of the universe, and elaborately proclaimed the fullness of the mercy bestowed upon Shiva by Lord Krishna. And I'll just read the translations of the verses from now on. Lord Rudra, the best of Vaishnavas, the initiator of devotional service to Vishnu, at once covered his ears and angrily replied. Verse 11. Lord Shiva said, I am not the Lord of the universe, nor an object of Krishna's mercy. I am just a poor soul, always hankering for the favor of the servants of his servants. This is Lord Shiva. He's a humble devotee, actually. Sri Parikshit said, this is all being recited by Maharaj Parikshit, to his mother Uttara, just after Shukadev Goswami finished reciting Srimad Bhagavatam to him, to Parikshit Maharaj. Then he met his mother. You know, Parikshit is about to be killed by the bite of a snake bird. But just before the snake bird came, and just after Shukadev finished reciting the Bhagavatam, then Parikshit met his mother, Uttara, and recites Brihad Bhagavatamrita to her, the essence of what he has heard in Srimad Bhagavatam. Okay, so Sri Parikshit said, upon hearing this, the sage Narada was shocked, thinking he had acted offensively. He at once stopped praising Lord Shiva's non-difference from Krishna and began to speak in a soft voice. Sri Narada said, you certainly know the confidential, mysterious glories of Lord Vishnu and the Vaishnavas, and you expertly explain those glories. Incidentally, I believe we have a questions sheet, questions pad going around, is it? Anyway, we hope there is or will be. We requested one. Anyway, in a little while, after we've said a few words, and if anyone's got any questions, we'll try to answer the questions. So Narada is continuing to glorify Lord Shiva. The best Vaishnavas therefore aspire for your mercy, Lord Shiva. Lord Krishna also has great regard for you and extensively spreads your glory. Has Krishna not worshipped you many times in his various incarnations and taken from you many boons? Sri Parikshit said, hearing this, Lord Shiva could no longer maintain his gravity. Ashamed, he sprang to his feet, covered Narada's mouth with both hands and said, don't even mention that arrogance of mine. It's amazing. This is Lord Shiva. Don't even mention that arrogance of mine, that I thought that I am on such a level that I can accept worship from Lord Krishna. Oh no, please. And that I have offered Lord Krishna many benedictions. It's happened actually. These things that have happened as part of the pastimes of the Lord, that sometimes he worships his devotee. And he loves worshipping his devotees, actually, Lord Krishna. And you may know, I'm sure many of you know, that in Ramayana, just when Lord Ram is about to cross over to Lanka to rescue Sita and kill Ravana, that of course there are different versions, because there are different versions of Ramayana, but some do say that Lord Ram worshipped Lord Shiva and then crossed over to Lanka. So sometimes people feel that because Lord Ram worshipped Lord Shiva, this means that Lord Shiva is higher than Lord Ram and should be accepted like that. And Ram's on a lower level and we shouldn't take Lord Ram as seriously as we take Lord Shiva. But us as Vaishnavas, we don't accept that at all, because we know there are many examples. There's a number of examples, at least, where Lord Krishna worships his devotees. And he's just so happy doing that. And it's just a very beautiful feature of his character, of his nature, that he appreciates the devotees so much. Just like we mentioned Lord Chaitanya asking questions of Ramananda Roy. It's the same idea. And even Ramananda Roy says from time to time that, why are you asking me? What are you doing asking me? And he says sometimes, particularly towards the end of the first part of the discussion, he says to Lord Chaitanya, I don't know the answer to this question, but I'll just open my mouth and let's see what comes out by your mercy. Right. So Lord Shiva, he is a devotee actually. And the fact that the Supreme Personality of Godhead may worship him, or any other person, any other devotee at any time, has nothing to do with any idea of Lord Shiva being superior. So here he says, don't even mention that arrogance of mine. He then boldly told Narada with surprise in his voice, just see the most incomprehensible power of the pastimes of the Supreme Lord. And there's a little purport here, just one sentence. Putting aside his embarrassment, Lord Shiva pointed out to Narada the wonderful uniqueness of the pastimes the Supreme Lord enacts with his devotees, in which the Lord takes upon himself many severe vows and penances just to win the devotees' blessings. This is now Lord Shiva continuing. Oh, my Lord is so sober. He is such a deep and varied ocean of great quality. Even though I have committed many kinds of offenses against him, he still does not reject me. And let me read this, a nice purport here, actually. Let me read this purport. The ocean is so, it is too deep for one to measure. What to speak of diving into it and reaching its bottom? The ocean cannot be moved from its fixed place, and the opposite shore is far beyond anyone's vision. Similarly, the Supreme Lord's qualities are countless. They include every possible kind of greatness, and each of his qualities is unrestricted and boundless. Lord Shiva considered himself offensive to have shown off his own power before Lord Krishna by offering him benedictions. Other offenses he had committed against the Lord were too painful for him to recall. But Sri Krishna never considers anything done by Lord Shiva offensive. Since Lord Shiva always acts in this world only to promote the cause of Krishna's devotional service, either directly or indirectly. And then just one last verse I'll read. Sri Parikshit said, seeing Lord Shiva completely absorbed in the transcendental taste of pure devotion for Krishna, Narada, pleased beyond limit, grasped Lord Shiva's feet, made him sit down again, and spoke to appease him. And what did Narada say? Tune in next week, and you'll find out. Well, actually, tune in tomorrow on the internet. But we'll continue the story. Yeah, right. So, like I said, I want to say a few things about Lord Shiva. He's an often misunderstood person, or even generally or practically always, except for the Vaishnavas, he's a misunderstood person. He's just really not understood. And he is placed in a position higher than the position, than his natural position. And of course, some people, if they're elevated somehow or other or glorified beyond their real sort of capabilities, some ordinary materialistic people, they will be very happy if they're described as being greater than what they are. But not the Vaishnavas, not the devotees. The devotees hate being glorified. You remember what we read at one point just a few verses before? Lord Shiva jumped up, told Narada to stop it, and put both his hands on Narada Muni's mouth, you know. And the idea is, you just stop it now, and just don't say anything more. Because that's the natural feeling of a Vaishnava. Vaishnavas by nature, depending on to what degree they're Vaishnavas. Of course, there are Vaishnavas, and then there are Vaishnavas, if you know what I mean. Yeah. There are Vaishnavas, and then there are Vaishnavas. Something like that. So Lord Shiva is just one of them. Vaishnavas. And there's the questions sheet for those who'd like. Not that she's bringing it around. Yeah. So, humility is a natural part of the nature of a Vaishnava, to whatever degree the person is a Vaishnava. Because here we are in the material world. And of course we're all trying. The great majority of you I know personally, sometimes it's hard to recognize you with a mask on. But still, the great majority of you I recognize, and your sincere devotees. Maybe a few of you I don't know so well, or maybe one or two not at all. But we're here in the material world, and we're trying to cross the bridge from the material world into the spiritual world, but it's a bit of a bridge to cross. It's a bit of a bridge, and sometimes some devotee who's basically trying to cross, but sometimes they turn around and look back and think, wait a minute, do I really want to leave whatever they're coming from in material life? Do I really want to leave it behind? And a few sometimes they even go back to the wrong side of the bridge. But at least oftentimes there are challenges trying to cross that bridge and really enter into the spiritual realm. And because of that, sometimes devotees show mixed qualities. Some spiritual, some Krishna conscious, but some material. These things happen, to some at least. And anyway, the point is, devotees are on different levels, depending on how far they have crossed the bridge to the transcendental side, or how far they have not gone. Maybe they haven't really gone so far across the bridge, and they're still influenced fairly substantially by the material nature. So one of the ways of judging, you know, in a sense we don't like to judge people too much, but one of the ways in which, shall we say, it can become apparent, at least roughly, what level this devotee or that devotee may be on, is in terms of the degree of humility and the degree of service attitude. Oh yes. Because, you know, you cannot hide for long what sort of devotee you are or you aren't. You can't hide it for long. At least from many devotees, because many devotees are quite tuned into these things. So Lord Shiva, actually, even though he is a great personality in and of his own right as a demigod and Ashutosh, he who fulfills the desires of others, but as a Vaishnava, actually he's very humble, extremely humble. And therefore, to be glorified, as Narada was doing, is just too distasteful for him, and he couldn't tolerate it. And so he stopped Narada, physically, forcibly. So that's nice. And that's really nice. And just one point, one thing we can take home from this, is that we must try to cultivate humility, real humility, because who of us is really that qualified, even by material standards? Even someone who has, you know, who's wealthy, or someone who has big educational qualification, PhD or two, Prabhupada on a few occasions when there was some talk about material educational qualifications, the highest of which generally is PhD, I guess higher would be Nobel Peace Prize, but I don't think we've got so many candidates for that. But PhD, Prabhupada sometimes would laugh and say, yes, plow department, PhD, plow department. Because what does it mean? Ultimately, it means it's a way for you to get a better job, to earn money, to just maintain your physical existence. And, you know, like plowing a field to cultivate food. Yeah, so we really have very little to be proud of materially, and we should try to cultivate humility. And Srila Prabhupada noted a conversation, it's a little bit famous conversation from around the time of the Second World War, or just maybe immediately after, that Winston Churchill was the Prime Minister of England, and he was quite famous for not being humble, actually. And he was criticizing one of the Vanderbilts, who are or were a very wealthy family from America and England. So he was to this lady from that very prominent and wealthy family. He was criticizing some member of the opposite party in Parliament, and the lady said, don't criticize him like that. He's a very nice man. He has many good qualities. And she said, he is very humble. And Winston Churchill said, yes, and he has a lot to be humble about. Did you get that? In other words, he's a bit of a stupid. Yeah. So we have a lot to be humbled about, which is our good fortune in a sense. We are not so intelligent and we've messed up in so many ways. Oh my gosh. It's crazy actually. So we have a lot to be humble about, and that's good as long as we can see it. But the influence of Maya is such, the influence of illusion is such, that we lose the ability to see these weak points we have, and rather we start thinking we have many good points, and in this way we become puffed up. So just one little word of advice. If you'd like to cultivate some humility, we often suggest, please pray to Krishna along these lines. Just listen to this. Pray to Krishna, my dear Lord, I know I'm a fool, but the problem is, I am such a fool, I cannot see how much of a fool I am. So my Lord, please give me the eyes to see these things so that I actually become humble in a real and natural way. Because I'm feeling, wow, I'm really like that. Oh my gosh. And not just sort of talking oneself into being humble or artificially humble. Yeah, one can actually see that, oh, I'm like this and I'm like that. I'm not in a good condition. And then in a natural way, one actually feels humble. And then a service attitude can develop much more easily. So anyway, like I said, I wanted to say a few things about Lord Shiva. And, you know, we have time. We have time. So just relax. Just relax. And open your ears. And open your hearts. And let's see if we can pour in a little something. First thing I want to say, just very first thing, is this is a verse from Brahma Samhita, actually. I didn't note the number of it, but I think it's 43. Anyway, it's somewhere about there. In which Lord Brahma is describing Lord Shiva, who he addresses, who he refers to as Shambhu, Lord Shambhu. Shilamd yata dhati vikara visheshya yoga sanjayate nahitata pritagasti heto yashambhutam apitata samupaiti karyat govindam adipurusham tamaham bhajami. Just as milk is transformed into yogurt by the action of acid, but yet, the result, yogurt, is neither the same as, nor different from, its cause, milk. So I adore the primeval Lord Govinda, of whom the state of Shambhu, or Lord Shiva, is a transformation for the performance of the work of destruction. We all know milk, we all know yogurt very, very well. And maybe some of you at home, you've made yogurt from milk before. It's not hard. It is a bit of a, you've got to know what you're doing. But once you know what you're doing, then you can, any time, you can turn milk into yogurt and it'll be nice. It's just a matter of getting it started, basically. So, yeah. So, well, let me ask you, how many of you have made yogurt from milk? I've made yogurt from milk. Anyway, a few of you. How many of you have made milk from yogurt? Just the other way around. No, nobody's made milk from yogurt. Although to make yogurt from milk, you know, it's, yogurt is everywhere. It's an extremely common foodstuff. So that's what Lord Brahma is saying. That just as milk, if you apply a certain type of acid to milk in a certain way, then you get yogurt. So when you take Lord Vishnu, and by some extraordinary transcendental process, you apply something sort of acidic to Lord Vishnu, then what you get out at the end is Lord Shiva. But you can't change him back. He's permanently changed by contact with a souring agent. He's become more sour. He's not so sweet like Lord Krishna, Lord Vishnu, or like milk. Milk, the characteristic taste of milk is sweetness, lactose. Is the sugar which can be derived from milk if you know how to extract it. And it's sugar. It's sweet. Yes, but yogurt, particularly good yogurt, you know, good yogurt which is made from a really strong souring agent, good yogurt is pretty sour, actually. Yeah. And that's Lord Shiva. And he's permanently in that state, and you can't turn him back. So as Lord Brahma said, the result, yogurt, you know, you apply the acid to the milk, and the result, the yogurt, is neither the same as, nor different from, the cause, milk. Achintya Veda Vay Tattva. One with, but different from. And you cannot overlook either. You cannot, and we should not overlook the fact that Lord Shiva is a type of form of the Supreme Lord. But we must not overlook the fact that he has become changed. Therefore, you cannot actually include him just as forms of the Lord are easily included in the category of Vishnu Tattva. As forms of the Lord, you cannot include Lord Shiva as a regular form of the Lord because he's not. He's become soured. By what? Contact with the souring agent. And what was the souring agent? Well, devotees, her name was Parvati, or Durga. Now, we are not, don't take it that I'm anti-ladies, because it's just not true. But in this case, this is what happened. She's the presiding deity of the material nature. And he had contact with her, and any husband who has a wife is without a doubt influenced by the wife. And cannot say that, no, I'm just the same, you know, like before I was married, I was a young man and I'm just the same. No, no, you're not. Change has taken place. And it's kind of permanent for the rest of the life, or like that, till death do us part. So this is the unusual position of Lord Shiva, that in many ways he's like the Supreme Lord, so he's very wonderful. But he has been changed, and there is this other side to him, which sometimes comes out in ways which aren't really the best. So I want to tell you a couple of stories. You don't mind if we go over time, do you? I think it's fine. The prasadam will still be there at the end. Yeah. And someone in that, oh, it was Rajeshri, announced that Govinda Charan Prabhu is going to sing for the Guru Puja. I was going to ask him if I could. I haven't led a kirtan for weeks. We were having nice kirtans in Radharana every evening, and the mornings too. Really nice, but here, lots of japa. So anyway, let's see now. A Lord Shiva story. I've got a whole lot of Lord Shiva stories. Let me tell you. I think I'll tell you a couple. Let me tell you the story of Nandishvara Shiva. This is an interesting story. It is actually from Vrindavan. And it is from Nandagram. I'm sure many of you have been to Nandagram. It's a very sacred and special place. And on top of the hill is the main temple, where they say the palace of Nanda Maharaj was. And on the altar there's Krishna and Balaram, Nanda and Yashoda, and some others. And just by one of the main entrances to the compound, it's a walled compound, in the middle is this temple building. Just by one of the main entrances is the little temple, the little shrine of Nandishvara Shiva. It's the Shiva Linga. And there's a story behind it. Let me tell you the story. One time, when Lord Krishna was living in Nandagram, in the palace of Nanda and Yashoda, his parents. So one time, Lord Shiva came to visit, to get darshan of Mother Yashoda's Lala. Lala, that's what she often calls Krishna, Lala, meaning little boy. So he knocked on the door. Mother Yashoda opened the door, and there she saw Lord Shiva with his body covered in the ashes of cremated human bodies, with a cobra around his neck and a few scorpions climbing over his chest, a fountain of water coming out of his head. It's the Ganges, but she just thought, what is this? And the moon in his hair. And he looked pretty wild. He looked just really extreme. And then he said, "Can I have darshan of your Lala?" And sort of took a step towards entering in through the door. And Mother Yashoda just said, "No!" and slammed the door shut right in the face of Lord Shiva. So poor Lord Shiva, he was very disappointed. He just turned around and walked away. But right at that moment, devotees, Lala, little young boy Krishna, started crying and crying and just really howling, actually, because he had wanted to see his devotee, Lord Shiva. Yeah. But Mother Yashoda didn't know that was why he was crying. So she couldn't figure it out. And you know what children are like. Every now and then they cry. It's sort of one of the main dharmas of children is to cry. So, you know, initially Mother Yashoda thought, "Oh, well, he's crying, okay. And, you know, we'll do the usual things. We'll bounce him up and down a bit. Tell him, look at the cows." And, you know, some little things like that to distract him and get him laughing at anything, even nothing. But he wouldn't stop crying. And some of the other ladies came. And the other ladies, they also tried to pacify Krishna. They couldn't do it. And he was just sort of losing it in a state of disturbance. So one lady asked, "Has anyone unusual come to your house?" And Mother Yashoda said, "No, not really." "Oh, but wait a minute. There was this one Baba. He was really extreme. He had a snake around his neck and scorpions on his chest, etc., etc." She described. "And he wanted to see Lala, but I told him no, and I just closed the door in his face." And the other lady said, "Aha. I think that Baba has put Naja on your Lala." Okay. What to do? Well, you've got to go and find the Baba and pacify him somehow. Get him to take his naja off. So they went out and searched and searched. And finally they found him at the bottom of the hill, and actually some distance out. He was by Wan Kund, which is a very beautiful place there. Asheshvara Kund. And Mother Yashoda appealed to him, "Oh, wouldn't you like to see Lala? I'm sorry, I was just, you know, I've been having a bad morning, but therefore I chased you away, but come up, please." So Lord Shiva came up, and there was Krishna still crying and crying. But when he saw Lord Shiva, his dear devotee, he stopped. And he smiled and smiled and laughed, and he was so happy. And Lord Shiva was happy. And then Lord Shiva said, "Okay, thank you so much. Now I've got to go on my way." And he started walking away. And as soon as he left, Krishna started crying again, uncontrollably. And Mother Yashoda ran out after Lord Shiva and said, "Baba, Baba, you've got to come back. He's crying again. Come back." So Lord Shiva came back. Krishna stopped crying. But then Lord Shiva said, "You know, I really have to go." And off he went, and Krishna started crying again. And Mother Yashoda stopped Lord Shiva and said, "Baba, you can't go. You got to stay here." And Lord Shiva said, "I can't stay here. I've got things to do." "No, you got to stay here." And Lord Shiva said, "All right, I will expand myself and stay here on the condition, the conditions that every day after Lala has his morning bath, I am the first one to get the Charanamrita. All right? And second thing, after Lala's midday meal, the Raj Bhoga, I want to be the first one to get the Mahaprasad." And Mother Yashoda agreed, "No problem, no problem. Both things fine." So he expanded himself into that Shiva Linga, which is by one of the main gates into the compound. And every day, to this day, thousands of years later, he gets the Charanamrita. He's the first one. Early in the morning, they come and pour it over the Shiva Linga, Nandishwara. And after the Raj Bhoga offering, in sort of like 12 or 12:30 thereabouts, a plate of Mahaprasad comes out to him. And, you know, you should see the rotis they make. We were there once. Were you with me?
Yes.
Oh, you were there. The rotis, you think you know how to make a big roti. Gee, these rotis are like this size. They're the biggest rotis I've ever seen. Big roti, little subject. That's how they do it. Okay, now, yeah, so that's the story of Nandishwara Shiva. So when you go there next time, maybe we'll all go there together after this whole craziness is finished. But let me tell you another story. This is the story of Gopishwar. That was Nandishwar. This is Gopishwar Shiva. Shiva as a devotee. So Lord Shiva was watching from up there, Kailash side, when Krishna was here. And every night, Krishna would have rasa dance. And you know Lord Shiva's Nataraj, he loves dancing. And he's really good at it. So Lord Shiva decided that I'm going to go and join this rasa dance. So down he went, and he landed near a place, a kund, a very, a another just such a beautiful place called Mansarovar. And so he landed there, and he was like, okay, let's get ready, and we'll go and join the Rasa dance. It was the afternoon time. And who should come but Purnamasi, who is the presiding deity of the pastimes. She's Yogamaya, the Leela Shakti in Vrindavan. So Purnamasi said, where do you think you are going? And he said, oh, I'm going to go join the Rasa dance. Yeah, great. Hari Bol. And Purnamasi said, no, no, no. Krishna is the only male in the Rasa dance. You can't go. And Lord Shiva was so disappointed. And Purnamasi said, all right, listen. I will dip you in the waters of Mansarovar, and then you'll come out in a female form. Then you can go join the Rasa dance. So Lord Shiva was agreeable. And he got dipped in Mansarovar, and sure enough, he came out in a female form. And this is Gopeshwar. Gopeshwar Shiva. So, you know, any of you gentlemen, if you come with us to Vrindavan and we go to Mansarovar, just watch out. You never know what's going to happen there. So, right. So now it's Lord Shiva in a female form with a sari on and jewelry and so on. But still with certain of the characteristic aspects of the appearance of Lord Shiva. Lord Shiva's a big, powerful man. Gopeshwar Shiva was a big, powerful girl. Really powerful. And there was still the snake around the neck, and the scorpions, and the Ganges, and the moon, and the ashes of cremated human bodies. Yeah, sure. Okay. So off she went though, not worried about these things. And then she arrived there at the Rasa Dance arena. And she just walked in. Okay, when shall we begin? And the gopis took one long look at her and asked, who are you? And what do you think you're doing here? And Gopeshwar said, oh, I've come for the dance. Yeah, I'm ready. Let's go. Let's begin. And the gopis said, listen, we know everyone in Vrajmandala, but we never saw you. Who are you? What's your name? Now, Purnamasi, despite everything, had neglected to give Gopeshwar a name. He or she got the name Gopeshwar a bit later, but right at this point, there's no name. And he couldn't say, well, I'm Lord Shiva, I just happened to be in a female form. That wouldn't have gone over well. And they were asking, well, what's your name? Who are you? Tell us. Come on. Who are you? And Lord Shiva said, you know, I'm so excited. I'm just so excited. I've forgotten my name. And they said, oh, you forgot your name. Forgot. Completely forgot. Sorry. All right. Well, what are the names of your parents? Of course, you know Lord Shiva, the demigod within this universe. He came from the forehead of Lord Brahma. That's another bit of a long story, but that's how he appeared. So he couldn't, she couldn't say that. So, to try to blend in with the local flora and fauna, Prishva Shiva said, "Oh, you want to know who my parents are? Yes. You mean like my mother and father? Yes. Mum and dad? Yes." And he said, "Well, I just call them mum and dad. I don't know their names." "Oh, you don't know the names of your parents. That's fine. Means it's not fine." "All right then, which village do you live in? Tell us, what's the name of the village?" And Gopishvat, sure, didn't know what to say at all. Said, "Village, well, I just call it home. You know, you go down that road and you turn left, I think, or is it right? But then you turn right, or is it left? And you go down a little and you take another right, or what was it, or left, or both ways. And then it's just down that way. You know the village." "Yes, of course, we know the village. That's wonderful. And what's the snake doing around your neck?" "Oh, him. Well, don't worry. He's a pet. He's friendly. He doesn't bite." "Oh, that's nice. And the scorpions also." "Yes, the scorpions too." "And what are all these? It looks like the ashes of cremated bodies all over your body. What is that?" "Oh, that. Latest cosmetic. It's nice. Would you like some?" "It's okay, thank you." "And what's the spout of water coming out of your head?" "Oh, that keeps me cool in the summer." And the gopis are just saying, "Right, okay, fine. Oh, that's good." And they got to this point and they said, listen, you want to join the Rasa dance? Forget it. You are too weird. And not only that, we are going to beat you up and chase you away. That's what we're going to do." So they started circling Gopishwa Shiva, who got into great anxiety. And then Purnamasi came. Again, Purnamasi came. Very well. And Purnamasi told the gopis, "Listen, I know she's a bit eccentric, but I know her personally. She is a really nice girl. So don't beat her up. She just wants to join the dance." And the gopi said, "All right, if you tell us, we will not beat her up. But we're not going to let her into the Rasa dance. She is just too strange." And then Purnamasi said, "All right, but see what a big, strong girl she is. Let her just stand by the edge of the Rasa dance, and she can be the bouncer, the security person. And if anyone unqualified comes, she'll just send them away." So the gopis agreed. And therefore, Shiva is there as Gopishwa at the place of the Rasa dance. Special mercy on Lord Shiva to let him get so close to the dearmost pastime of the Lord with his dearmost devotees. Therefore, it is said, if some unqualified, well, when people go to join the Rasa dance, Vrinda Devi is the ticket collector. She checks to see if you're the real deal, if you should be allowed in or not. And if you're okay, she lets you in. But if you're not okay, she calls for Gopishwa. And that's it. Firmalinga. So anyway, devotees, here's a few things about Lord Shiva, and we read the verses from Brihad Bhagavatamrita, and it's just so wonderful. We have a few questions. We'll quickly answer the questions, and then we'll have Guru Puja. Just as Lord Shiva residing in Shiva Loka is superior to Lord Shiva in Kailash, how do we understand Lord Vishnu, who is residing in Vaikuntha, as well as expanding in each universe? Yeah. Well, yes, there's a similar type of principle. Lord Vishnu in Vaikuntha, of course, is less than Krishna, who was his source. And the Purusha avatars of the Lord within the universes, particularly Gavadakshai and Shiradakshai, they're described as, Lord Brahma actually says, Vishnur Mahan Saiha Yasya Kala Vishesho, that the Mahavishnu, Vishnur Mahan Saiha Yasya Kala. The Kala means a part of a part of Krishna, particularly. He's part of Lord Vishnu, Lord Narayan from Vaikuntha, who is a part of Krishna from Goloka. So Vishnu Mahan, the Mahavishnu, is a part of a part of Lord Krishna. How does one become determined and enthusiastic in Krishna consciousness, and how to maintain that determination? Some of you, anyway, take it or leave it. This is from Srila Prabhupada. We were just discussing this a few weeks ago. A few months ago when we were doing Bhagavad Gita for Bhakti Shastri. Determination is developed through, you know what? Celibacy. Yes. If a person is celibate, if a person follows the regulative principles nicely, then they develop even unbreakable determination. And how to maintain that? Anyway, just you carry on. Of course, for householders, to have children is, you know, if not a duty, I mean, it's arguable it could be called a duty, but at the very least, it's an option which is available to them. And if it's done nicely, then it doesn't need to interfere with determination, but still, to live a life of celibacy and strict following of regulative principles, Prabhupada emphasizes, it will help you to develop and then maintain determination in Krishna consciousness. Why does Lord Shiva give benediction so easily? It's because it's his duty as a demigod. It's not exactly that he likes to give people material things, because he's a Vaishnava, and he knows that through getting these material things, they'll become entangled in material life. And in this way, their position spiritually will not be good. But still, it's his duty. Therefore, he does it begrudgingly, not happily, reluctantly. And therefore, you see pictures of Lord Shiva with his mala, Rudraksha mala, or Tulsi mala. And he's chanting the names of the Lord. This is where he gets his nectar from. But then along comes some materialistic worshipper who wants some material things, knocking on Lord Shiva's door. Lord Shiva doesn't even have a door. He just lives under a tree. And then giving a shopping list. I want this and this and this and this and so many things. And Lord Shiva, when he sees the person in the shopping list, he thinks, oh no, one of them again. And then he quickly gives the person what they want so he can get back to his chanting as quickly as possible. Just take these things and go. Now you want a Mercedes-Benz, take a Rolls-Royce. Take two. You want a Lani house? Take three. You want R1 billion? Take 10 billion and just go. And then he gets back to his chanting, which is what he really likes. There are qualities that Jesus share with the Supreme Lord, and then there are qualities we don't have that Lord Shiva does have in common with the Lord. What are these special qualities possessed by Lord Shiva? And then what are the qualities unique to Lord Sri Krishna? You know, I know the qualities unique to Lord Krishna, the ones unique to Lord, well, not unique, but possessed by Lord Shiva and not us. You know, we don't really focus on those so much, but at least one of them is that he is the source of many universes. He can be the source of many universes. So he has powers like that, which we don't and cannot have. But the qualities possessed by Lord Krishna, there's four, which what to speak of Lord Shiva not having, but even Lord Narayan does not have. Lord Narayan is higher and has more qualities than Lord Shiva. So, one is that Lord Krishna has beauty which totally surpasses the beauty of anybody else, even Lord Narayan, who's the next most beautiful. So that's one, his beauty. He plays the flute. Nobody else can play like him. It's so amazing that water becomes rock, rock melts, rivers flow backwards when they hear the sound of Krishna's flute. So that's two. Third is, he has pastimes which are just completely beyond the pastimes of anyone else, particularly the Rasadans. And then the fourth is, he is surrounded by devotees who have a greater degree of love for God than the devotees of any other form of the Lord. Okay, we're almost there, devotees. Okay. And this is from Taurisha. Where's Taurisha? Is that Taurisha? Sorry. Taurisha? Haribol. Thank you for the very nice question. Question is, why does Krishna come in different forms? Isn't that a nice question? We could have a whole seminar on that. But basically, you know, there's a few reasons. The actual main reason is because there are so many devotees, and many of the devotees are attracted to Krishna in different ways from each other. And therefore, Krishna, because he wants to please his devotees, he appears in the different forms that they want to see him in. And because there's so many devotees who are attracted in different ways, therefore there's so many forms. There's an unlimited number of forms, actually, to please the devotees who want to see the Lord one in this way, another in that way, another one in another way, like that. Yeah, and then again, you know, it's also possible to say that the Lord appears in all the species in order to give his mercy to the members of all the different species. He appears in all the species. That's really quite something. But that's there also. But the main thing is to please the devotees who have their different desires to see the Lord in different forms so they can have different types of exchanges and relationships with him. Hare Krishna. Oh. It's okay. We understand. Thank you for listening very attentively. For those who want, tomorrow on our Facebook page, 6 o'clock. Well, at 4:30 we'll be chanting japa, actually. And you can join us till 6, and then at 6 till 7 on my Facebook page. We'll continue with from the point we just left off. Hare Krishna. Srila Prabhupada ki jaya. Okay.